Good afternoon, Los Angeles and all of Southern California. I'm Farley Malaris, and you're listening to Astrological Metaphysical Radio, The Phenomenon of the 80s, on KFOX 93.5 FM, your talk alternative. We are continuing today with our topic, How to Learn Astrology. Today's focus is on the outer planets of Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, what we refer to as the impersonal planets, the generational planets by sign, but always being personal by house. So welcome to another exciting edition of the Astrology Hour. I'm always happy to be here with you. It never ceases to amaze me, this feeling that I get whenever I go on the radio every day. No matter what my morning was like, no matter what I went through in the morning, as soon as I put these headphones on and I hear that music, something happens. Something wild happens. At least it's fun. And don't you wish you had a set of headphones that you could play with every day at 12 noon to make your day that much better? Well, this little seminar we've been doing, How to Learn Astrology, the past few days has helped a lot of people review their astrology. If you are a new listener within the last week or two, this is an exciting time for you because I am going through a lot of the basics to understand the astrology chart, so you are learning a whole bunch. And of course, because this is a classroom show, if you have any questions about these topics, then it's very important that you call me up on the air and let me know what your question is so we can learn together, live and learn together on KFOX, okay? Let's take a look at these outer planets here. You know, the outer planets, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, move a heck of a lot slower than Sun, Moon, Mercury, Venus, and Mars do in our natal charts. So babies born in any one or two or actually almost a 3 or a 4 month period are going to have the same Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, and Pluto, because those puppies move pretty slow. And that's right, so people born around August of 1948 and September of 1948 and November of 1948 and July of 1948 and June of 1948 and actually May and also April and March and February of 1948 are people I'm going to relate to. Do you know why? Because all those people like Farley have Jupiter in Sagittarius, Saturn in Leo, Uranus in Gemini, Neptune in Libra, and Pluto in Leo. So don't you see, we all come from the same astrological generation as reflected from those planets, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. And that is why, in many ways, you definitely do relate to generations that you come through with, as far as understanding certain ideals, certain cultural traits and tendencies. That's why when Neptune went into Libra for about a 16-year period, this free love and this communal living and this hippie philosophy and drug experimentation and relationship experimentation and all those berserk combinations from Neptune being in Libra came about. Neptune was actually misplaced in Libra and gave a lot of these people in this generation a false sense of fantasy and of nirvana that never really came to pass, but at least people tried to create a lot of artificial illusions through drugs, marijuana, alcohol, and LSD and such, and cocaine. And the current generations are going beyond just experimentation, of course. They're just abusing the heck out of their lives by using that stuff. But, you know, understanding astrology is really not that difficult when you sit down and think about it. I'll tell you why. Because to really plug into an individual's personal personality and character, you have to go beyond the generational planets. That's why in earlier this week when I talked about the three majors, the Sun, the Moon, and the rising sign, and the importance of Mercury and Venus and Mars, these are planets which really do define character and refine personality, individuality, and identity. It seems like the closer we get to the Earth from beyond this realm, the faster the planets and the Moon move, and the more of a definition we get of an individual as far as what the illusion of life is really all about. See, life is actually an illusion of separation, because we are all one in truth. We are all bonded and united into one source of energy, one source of power, which is actually the God center, the source of all love and light in the universe. We are typically, we come from this source. But when you're born into this realm, into the third dimension, the realm of height and width and depth, three dimensions, we are given this illusion of matter. You know, we take all these light particles, these atoms, these molecules, these electrons, neutrons, protons, and we put them together into a dense state where, from where, by using our senses, our eyes, our ears, our nose, our hearing, whatever, we sense this light to be solid and also material from our definition, matter. And the world we live in also does appear to have substance. But in truth, you know, if you were truly aware of this energy that we are sensing, you would know that all it is light, light energy, light matter, and an illusion as far as what we sense. In other words, what you sense to really be there is just a tiny, tiny tip of the iceberg of what truly is represented by the energy in which we sense on a day-to-day basis. So these bodies and these minds, these brains and this clothes we wear and our belief systems and our values are all representative and the result of how we have grown to shape and condition ourselves and understand and react to this illusion, okay? And it's the same with when we're born. When we are born, we are affected by these huge, massive light energy systems, the stars and the planets that literally charge each other, because all matter does affect each other. Anywhere in this dimension, all light energy has a relationship with other light energy, so every atom in this universe has a relationship with every single other atom in this universe, in this dimension. And that's why when we're born, we pay particular attention to where the planets are in space, because from our point of view, they are what is moving. The stars really don't appear to be moving from the Earth point of view, but the planets do. So when we look at a baby's chart, when a baby's born and inhales the first breath, and we literally catch a photograph or a frozen picture of the planetary movements frozen in space, the moment that baby comes out of the womb and inhales that first breath, the atoms of that baby's body and of its brain and all the cells of its makeup are literally charged with the relationship that it shares with every other atom in the universe. And that's why the location of the planets, because this is the liquid or the fluid universe from our point of view, is so critical, and that represents the astrological effect or the natal chart at birth. Gosh, that's one of the best definitions I've ever given. Maybe I should write that one down, post it on the wall somewhere. Maybe you should too. But anyway, we have really gone over in pretty much detail the sun, the moon, rising sign, Mercury, and Venus earlier this week. And really, you know, the sun, moon, Mercury, Venus, and Mars, the sun representing the soul and your creative force, what you're born to master. The moon is your emotions and your mother and your karma in this lifetime emotionally. Sun is your father. Mercury is how you think, and Venus is your values, and Mars would be your life force, your battery, and Venus is the yin or the female energy, and Mars is the yang or the male energy. And rising sign is your personality, your character, and all that. You know, and everything we've discussed up till now has dealt with the self. See? But the other planets, Jupiter, which is the ninth house lord of Sagittarius, and Saturn, which is the tenth house lord of Capricorn, and Uranus, which is the 11th house lord of Aquarius, and Neptune, which is the 12th house lord of Pisces, and Pluto, which is the 8th house lord of Scorpio, you know, with the exception of Venus, which rules the 7th house, which is really where we kick off into other people. Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto have much more to do with the world, with other people. We go beyond the self. So that is why it is important to know that these planets do move so slow that so many millions of babies are born with the same astrological location, except for the degree, of course, of the Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto effect, right? So if you look at your friends you went through elementary school and high school and college with, in the same age group, or if you are 38 and you know a bunch of people that are 38, maybe you're 20 and you know a bunch of people that are 20, or you're 29 and you know a whole bunch of people that are 29, then you know that there's a real good chance that most all of you will have the same Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, and the majority of you will have the same Jupiter, okay? And that's why we're going to focus on these outer planets today, the generational effect. Now, first we're going to talk about these planets in their signs, then we're going to talk about how we can get more personal with them by looking at them in the houses But suffice it to say that Jupiter in a birth chart will reveal to us a higher part of our being as far as how we can be philosophical with the planet. For example, it's a simple correlation. If you have Aries in your chart, as far as Jupiter in Aries, we can find the expansive philosophical nature of Jupiter and the need to get in touch with the self, Aries. And this person with Jupiter in Aries will be philosophical concerning life or concerning self-realization, self-love, and anything that would be called Aryan. See how that works? Another example would be Scorpio. Let's say you have Jupiter, another expansive planet philosophically based, you know, telling us where the higher part of your reflection will be. We take Scorpio, which is an intense, mystical, secretive, intimate energy, and this is where you will be philosophical, depending those issues of intimacy and love and romance and secretive, mystical, occult matters. See, so that's why we can find out what really turns us on, the deep-rooted stuff that we really like to hash out. You know, I have Jupiter in Sagittarius, so anything to do with Sagittarius, like travel, animals, horses, sports, overall philosophy in general, you know, because Sag is the sign of philosophy, are things that I love to sink my teeth into. See, so Jupiter will specifically reveal to you where your expansion is in your life. Jupiter always is a benefic planet and tells us where our bonus is in our life. Now, whereas Jupiter expands, Saturn contracts and takes away. It is a limiting planet. It actually shows us where the discipline is needed, where the maturity is required, and where effort is needed, depending on what sign and house it's in. Right? So whereas Jupiter would tell us what our philosophy is, Saturn in our chart gives us the limitation that we might have. And notice that a whole generation for one full year, approximately, sometimes only 6 months, the Jupiter effect occurs for 6 to 12 full months. So all those babies born in that 6 to 12 month cycle will have similar philosophies. Interesting, huh? And all those babies born in a 2.5 year period will have similar limitation because Saturn stays in a sign for 2.5 years. So people with the same kind of karma are born within a 2.5 year period of each other. That's why people born around my time, 1946, 1947, 1948, have Saturn in Leo, our karma with Leonine things like creativity, authority, leadership, management, family, children, father, and also happiness, because Leo rules all those things. So Saturn in that sign gave us limitation in that area. That's why a lot of people had family problems and problems with their fathers when they were born in the late 40s, okay? And let's say you might have been born in 1954, 55, maybe part of 56. You'd have Saturn in Scorpio, right? So your limitations, whereas Jupiter would expand and make a person philosophically sexy, Saturn in Scorpio might limit some of your sexual sensitivity and some of your intimate fluidity in your life and create effort or need for lessons in these areas of bonding and closeness to other individuals, which would run free flow for Jupiter, but might create limitations for Saturn. So once again, astrology being a science of correlation, knowing your basic keywords for the 12 signs, and then getting down the keywords for the planets, you can pretty much understand what any planetary placing in a sign, placement in a sign would mean, and therefore help understand the baby or the person born with that particular placing. Okay, now we also look, when we look at Saturn, Saturn is a planet that also rules career. And it also rules ambition and success and martyrdom connected with same. So oftentimes we do have to suffer or go through an adaptation or a growth process or a letting go of something that is holding us down and preventing us from being strong. And sometimes the sadness involved with letting go of a certain part of our personality, our character, our behavior that we really think is right but in truth is wrong has a lot to do with that Saturn planet, that karma. And Saturn, as far as I'm concerned, is the planet that tells us which subject we are majoring in our lifetime. It's like, what's your major in college, son? Well, it's Saturn in Virgo, sir. Okay, well, then you're here to experience lessons concerning Virgo, which is service, ethics, work, health, analysis, judgment, all that stuff. See how it works? So you can find out your karma your limitations and where you are contracted from that Saturn effect. Now, Uranus is a lot more wilder because children born with Uranus, let's say there's 7 or 8 years of total generation in the same Uranus generation. And it's funny how whenever I meet people that are born with any one of my generational planets, they could be born in the early 40s or late 30s and still have Pluto in Leo. So in a way, I'll relate to them because I have Pluto in Leo. Or they could be born with, Uranus in Gemini all the way from early 1940s just up to 1948. You know, I got the tail end of that one. So that's why I relate to almost everybody born in the 40s, because we have Uranus in Gemini. We share that. And when you share a certain planet, then there's a continuity. There's a relationship. There's a fluidity that exists, a compatibility, a charisma that brings about understanding. Uranus is an awakening planet. It is the planet of genius and intellect. It's also the planet of friendships and goals and accomplishment, organization, astrology, science, technology. It rules a lot of things, but wherever Uranus is placed in your chart, this usually tells us the genius factor. That's why a lot of people, if not all the people born in the 40s with Uranus and Gemini, we have the awakening planet in the sign of psychology, and that's why many of us are natural therapists and very psychologically and talk and mentally oriented people. We're thinkers. We're a thinking generation. When Uranus went into Cancer, it awakened the emotions, and people born 1949, 1950, and so on. And this is the genius here should be in dealing emotionally, but sometimes because Uranus and Cancer was square Libra planets in the 50s, whereas Uranus and Cancer was trine Neptune some of the way, it started squaring Neptune and other Libra planets in the 50s. It, instead of giving emotional genius, it created an emotional erraticism or emotional problems in that generation. Uranus went into Leo in the late 50s and early 60s. And this also brought about a lot of shock changes with family and father, because Uranus was square Neptune for so many years. It squared Neptune in Libra when it was in Scorpio. I'm sorry, when it was in Cancer in the 50s, it squared Neptune and Libra in the late 50s and early 60s. As Uranus moved into Leo, Neptune moved into Scorpio, so Uranus still screwed Neptune, but it squared Neptune, so it kind of screwed Neptune up, actually, because it for a while, when Uranus is well aspected in your chart, it can create pure intellect and genius, but if it has squares and oppositions, it can create turmoil, erraticism, or deals and shock changes in your life, which may not be pleasant, okay? So Uranus in Leo and then in Virgo. Uranus did a lot better when it went into Virgo because it was conjuncting, it conjuncted Pluto for a while there in Virgo, and picked up a bunch of sextiles from some other planets, Neptune and Scorpio for a while there. So, Uranus was a lot better off in Virgo or in Gemini. It didn't do so well in Cancer or Leo when it went through that period. So be happy if you were born in the 40s or late 60s, I would think. But anyway, Uranus still is an awakener, and it does rule change, originality, freedom, reforming, rebelliousness. And it's funny that if you are in a generation with Uranus in square to something in your chart, then frankly you would not get along too well with people your age group. See, because if you have a Uranus square in your chart and you're dating someone with a similar Uranus square in their chart, that's going to create too much turmoil and too much hate and anger and frustration. So that's why if you're born with Uranus stress in your chart, you'd be better off dating or hanging out with friends and people that you would relate to that are not born in your Uranus generation, probably 7 or 10 years older or younger, which a lot of them happen to do naturally, to create free flow. Because Uranus is the planet of friends, and frankly, Uranus squares in a chart doesn't create too much fun with friends. It can create lots of turmoil unless the friends you hang out with don't stress your Uranus. Okay, isn't this a great topic? The how to learn astrology, the outer planets beyond Mars. Now, Neptune is, now we'll see, the further out we go, the longer these planets are in signs. So we're getting longer and longer generations here. And Neptune and Pluto hang in signs from 12 up to 16 or 18 years apiece. So the Neptunian generation you get is interesting because Neptune tells us where we dream. So you get a whole generation of people born, sometimes from 10 to 16 year generation of people, like when Neptune was in Cancer, I believe, It was there for so long. Let's see. Neptune was in Cancer for about 15 years. Anyway, Neptune is an idealistic planet, and it also rules compassion and faith and sensitivity. So you get a bunch of people with Neptune and Libra that dream of perfect relationships. Neptune dream and Libra relationships. Neptune was in Virgo before that, so you get people that are just plain perfectionists. They just dream of everything being perfect and together and clean and organized and no problem. Before that, Neptune was in Leo for a while, and then you have idealistic situations concerning family and father, dreaming of perfect situations there. Neptune in Cancer, ideal emotional situations you think would occur, sometimes emotional erraticism. Neptune was also in Scorpio, so perfect sexual relationships are what's dreamed of here. Then Neptune went into Sag and dreams of peace and freedom in those people, those children. So Neptune actually is a planet of hopes and dreams and passions and compassions and aspirations. And the sad thing about the Neptune effect is that when your dream is finally shattered, it's also an escapist factor. So if things don't pan out the way you want them to, that's why it's not real good to get your hopes up with real life, because in real life, when you get your hopes up too high and they don't pan out, the disappointment can be traumatic, and that's when Neptune can trigger drug and alcohol abuse or self-destruction or suicide or major depression and such. So Neptune, you know, is a really interesting planet as far as interdimensional effect or contact to the higher self if you're really good with it, if you don't let things get to you. And finally, Pluto, which is the lord of Scorpio, is a sexual factor planet. And frankly, when you look at Pluto in a person's natal chart, you can pretty much tell how they might respond sexually. There's a whole generation of people born in the 50s and the 60s with Pluto in Virgo. A lot of them have Uranus in Virgo. And this is a naturally prudent or sometimes frightened generation when it comes to intimacy and sex or connection or attachment. You know, some people used to think, well, gosh, you go out with a girl that's got Mars in Virgo, she's going to be prudish enough as it is. If she has Uranus and Pluto in Virgo, too, look out. But, you know, a lot of times there's an extremist behavior because people might not like this feeling of having their mother or their father's sitting on their shoulders when they're having romantic affairs. So they'll go to the extreme and they'll abuse their sexual abilities by being overindulgent. So lots of extremist behavior happens when Pluto's in Virgo. Pluto was in Libra for a Leo for a while, and that's a very aggressive generation, a domineering generation, dominant lovers, you know, I would say, with Pluto in Leo, and very warm, affectionate, hugging. Before that, Pluto was in Cancer, much more of a romantic generation, old-fashioned generation. See what I mean? Pluto is also the regeneration factor, the cooperation factor, the thorough and deep rebirthing or transformational factor. Obviously, Pluto in the fixed signs might have trouble regenerating or rebirthing because of the inability to let go, not being able to let go. Now, when you look at your outer planets, your Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, and Pluto, remember that there is a generational effect depending when you were born, and what year you were born for sure, but you do have these planets in your personal houses. The 12 houses of the zodiac are very personal. So even though I have Jupiter, which is a planet that rules philosophy, it lies in my second house of love, values, money, and also what's important to me in my life. So, you know, we have a focus on the generational effect of Jupiter in Sagittarius, which is philosophical freedoms, focused in my house of values, and that's why I teach it. You know, that's why I teach philosophy and open-mindedness, because Jupiter is placed in one of my personal houses. So when you learn your houses, you'll be able to cross-correlate the connection between the outer planets, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, with your house placements, and that way you'll be able to understand not only the generational effect from when you were born, but the personal effect of these planets depending on what houses they are placed in. Obviously, if you have Saturn in Aquarius, And you're going to have karma with your goals and your friends from Aquarian ethic and factor here. But if Saturn falls into your 10th house, right, because you're Taurus rising, you have Saturn in the 10th, now it's much more personal because the 10th house is your career. So the generational effect was goals and friends. You cross-connect that with career. You find out goals, friends, and careers are an effort for you in your life when you all try to juggle them together. And that's how astrology works to interpret individual effects. Let's look at another one here. Let's say you have Uranus in Cancer and you are a Capricorn rising. So Uranus now is in your seventh house. So the generational effect is Uranus in Cancer, which means you are already very sensitive from Uranus in Cancer. When it's in the seventh house of relationships, love, and marriage, we find you oversensitive concerning these issues of relationships, love, and marriage. And because Uranus rules breakup and divorce, we find these people with Uranus in the seventh subject to many relationships and or possible breakups and or divorces. See how it works? Or gosh, it's been such a wonderful week of enlightenment and basic astrology, so I've been very proud of those of you patient enough to hang in with me this week to learn about astrology as a science.